This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Heart Greens. Helping to support healthy blood pressure and circulation just became hassle-free. Introducing Heart Greens, the functional food that you drink using the same dark leafy greens recommended by both the DASH and Mediterranean diets. Get a free canister of Heart Greens with your first order and a 100% money-back guarantee. Heart Greens even guarantees you'll love the taste. Call 800-951-8940. That's 800-951-8940. Or visit IntelligentGreens.com. That's IntelligentGreens.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. We're talking about a remarkable book. It's the saga of one man's Harvard-documented remission of incurable cancer using only natural methods. The book is entitled N of One. Our guest, Glenn Sabin, and the book's been getting really rave reviews. Mark Hyman, who's director of the Cleveland Clinic Center for Functional Medicine, and well-known to many of you, says it's a remarkable story of self-efficacy and pure grit. Glenn is a poster child for evidence-based integrative oncology and an exemplar of what might be achieved for others. I highly recommend this book. And the introduction, written by none other than Dean Ornish, who has great things to say about it, because this, of course, is a tale of how lifestyle can have a big impact, even on not just mild fatigue or malaise, but on a very serious condition. Bernie Siegel, who is well known to many of you as an outstanding cancer practitioner, says, we need to understand that self-induced healing is an entity. It is not a spontaneous remission. We all need to learn from those who don't die when doctors expect them to. Glenn's experience and book will help you to understand and to achieve what is involved in survival behavior. That's a good term, survival behavior, because, you were given a diagnosis and, many patients are sometimes, they follow the script, they deteriorate, they take the medication when urged to, they feel helpless, and ultimately they succumb. And that's not something you did, correct?
No, because my options were not curative options. So I had to look at this a little differently, because I'm certainly a proponent of evidence-based oncology and standard of care. There are just situations, whether it's recurrent, metastatic disease or various types of cancer where there's not curative, opportunities based on what's available today. When somebody like me would go to more effort to figure out what the best approach may be for me as an individual.
And you're not an irrational refusenik. Some people, do irrational things, like parents whose children come down with meningitis and they feed them, raw maple syrup in an effort to, cure it. Your approach is not an eccentric approach. It's actually a realistic approach, because you poured through the evidence-based medicine on this. You met with cancer practitioners, both alternative as well as mainstream, and you weighed your options very carefully.
Right. I'm not really a theory. I am not a proponent of alternative medicine. I'm a proponent of evidence-based integrative oncology. My situation was just unique based on the diagnosis and the tools to treat the disease. So I kind of make that known throughout the book. I also go to great lengths to communicate that, I'm an individual. What worked for me isn't going to necessarily work for anybody else. N of one is not a recipe for, mm-hmm. Curing cancer without conventional, treatments and what have you. We have a, a case report that was published in the medical literature and, indexed on PubMed. It was important for that to be published before the book was completed.
Let's speak to that, because actually, so your story before it became a popular book was submitted as a medical research paper and published in a, I presume, an oncology journal, and it was describing whatever it was that you did and the nature of your recovery.
Yes, and that was co-authored by five physicians, including a Harvard dean, a Hopkins oncologist, Keith Block, who's a well-known integrative oncology practitioner, as well as Dr. Jeffrey White, the office director of the National Cancer Institute's Office for Cancer and Complementary and Alternative Medicine. Mm-hmm. So that was important to have this peer-reviewed and published, because there's a lot of cases of, you know, exceptional patients or exceptional recoveries, what we might call radical remissions, that are not part of the medical, the literature, and they really should be. It's really important. Yeah.
And indeed, in fact, the author of Radical Remission wrote a testimonial for your book, Kelly Turner, who was a guest on our program a couple years ago, and if one should be required reading for all cancer patients, but especially anyone who's received a dire prognosis. Okay, so let's get into the secret sauce here, at least the N of one secret sauce, because clearly, you know, it wasn't just hopefulness or some mystical belief in your recovery that turned things around. Although, you know, the mind is a powerful instrument in shaping the immune response. You had a dramatic turnaround, a very objective turnaround, where your white count was soaring, you were anemic, you were, you know, in serious trouble. And then you made certain adjustments to your program. What are some of the adjustments you think were crucial for you?
Well, at that point, you know, back in at that that would have been early fall of 2003, I took time off from work. I had a fairly stressful job running a media company. That was very helpful to take some time off and to, you know, focus inward on my health and to get out in nature more and to, you know, really de-stress. That was quite helpful. So was taking a close review of what I was doing from a supplement, a dietary supplement standpoint. We made some changes to that protocol based on, you know, what was happening with the underlying disease. And so as far as diet and some other aspects, I was always stayed true to, you know, those things that I was doing. I think that that between being able to de-stress, you know, a lot more and to be able to really focus inward and make some of these modifications that perhaps had an influence, you know, I through the book, I kind of make it clear that these outcomes, you know, this kind of remarkable clinical outcomes does not prove causation. It doesn't prove that what I did, you know, resulted in these outcomes. And when we bring to bear, you know, so many different approaches in terms of diet, physical activity, de-stressing, select nutraceuticals, deep hydration, sleep, etc., you know, and most of this is very, it's the core tenets of lifestyle medicine for which the medical literature is so supportive of. Mm-hmm. But when you look at all these things, you know, we don't do trials that are this complex because mm-hmm. it would make it very difficult to get funding for it. And it makes it very difficult for the biostatistician to kind of keep track of these
things. Too many variables because you're doing, a thousand different things. And,
absolutely.
You know, which is it that is the, you know, and the medical paradigm likes to do laser focused studies on, you know, all things being equal. If you take this medication, this pill versus a sugar pill, will your chances of beating an illness or surviving improve? That's how the conventional research model works. So it's really hard to study patients like you because you're doing a lot of different things. But on the issue, on the issue of stress, you know, you're probably aware that there just this month, a major study came out linking job-related stress, workplace stress, to a higher risk of many cancers. Not every cancer was linked to workplace stress, but many cancers, including, I think, chronic lymphocytic leukemia, were linked to workplace stress. This is not to say that everybody who's stressed is going to come down with cancer, nor is to say that if you just, you know, take a sabbatical and, you know, go down and bring your juicer to a to a Caribbean island and sit on the beach that your cancer is going to go away.
Sure.
But you know, there is a role that stress plays in accelerating or promoting cancer.
Yes, absolutely. Prolonged chronic stress creates a inflammation load and affects hormones, and it creates more of a pro-cancer environment, makes it easier for cancer to take hold and or spread. I think that's what the building literature is pointing to. Mm-hmm. I want to explain to your audience that the rest of the medical story.
Sure.
In terms of that I had that first episode that I was able to clear the disease where it was undetectable from my bloodstream, where looking at it through what's called a flow cytometry, which is a deeper look at the blood, it couldn't be seen. Mm-hmm. However, when I had a bone marrow biopsy done, there was still disease that was quite involved in the bone. In the bone marrow. So whereas when I was at the peak of my illness, my acute episode, we'll call it, it involved around 85 or 90% of the bone marrow. Now it was about 45 or 50% of the bone marrow. And for a period of 6 years, I was able to maintain from what they call a clinical level, a clear, was clear of leukemic cells. They call that a partial remission. And so for 6 years, I was in that state, if you will. And then in 2009, the disease was once again detectable in my bloodstream. Mm-hmm. And so 2009, this is
we sometimes refer to this as smoldering disease. You know, it's kind of like you put the fire out, but the embers are still glowing, and there's a chance to reignite the fire. And apparently that's what happened a few years later.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was very, grateful to have 6 years of being in that position without having gone through the conventional treatment that would have made the disease much harder to, treat in the future. It would have created mm-hmm. sensitivities to those particular drugs. So I went 6 years, and that would bring us to 2009. That's when I actually started working with my first integrative oncology specialist. Prior to that, I was working with a number of pharmacists that were nutritionists. Mm-hmm. So I was working with my first integrative oncology practitioner, Keith Block, in Illinois. And that's when we started to approach this a lot more scientifically in terms of the amount of labs that were done, looking at the blood and looking at what was happening across various markers, things like inflammation and sugar levels and hormone levels and all sorts of other things. And so that totally changed my dietary supplement protocol. Mm-hmm. Most other aspects of diet and physical activity and other areas were left alone. I was pretty. I was in a good place with those things. That period when the disease came back as far as detectable in the bloodstream. That's when the white count started, going up. Maybe about 55,000, which mm-hmm. for CLL, that's not all that high. There's folks with CLL that are not getting treated at this point in time that have 300,000 or 400,000. Mm-hmm. Right. But there's other aspects of the blood. I was anemic again, required attention. And at that point, we made, these various adjustments with the nutraceuticals, and then over the course of about 16 months, we had a remarkable outcome where the blood was normalized again without any conventional treatment, any kind of conventional interventions. The blood was again normalized, but this time, when we did a bone marrow transplant that I did up at Harvard, there was no evidence of disease in the marrow, and according to the Harvard pathologist, the notes on the on the report basically says no evidence of disease by phenotype or morphology, and could not tell that the patient ever had a lymphoproliferative disorder, which is pretty remarkable.
Wow.
So basically. clear the marrow.
Can you shed light on what that nutraceutical program was like? I know that one important component, and is something that is touted for the treatment of CLL. In fact, it's the subject of a Mayo Clinic study currently.
Yes.
EGCG from green tea. Tell us about that.
Sure. So there was a number of agents and botanicals that I have used over the course of time. And at that period, I was taking a clinical dosing level of EGCG, this green tea extract that you mentioned. And at the time, there was a clinical, I think it was a phase two clinical trial at Mayo Clinic, where they were giving patients patients that had never been treated, what they call asymptomatic patients with CLL, 4 grams of EGCG. Mm-hmm. So the 4 grams, which I consider a clinical dosing of EGCG, was part of my protocol in 2009. I still take take more maintenance dosing.
So the EGCG that I'm familiar with is 70%. 70%, that's about the highest you can get, or maybe there's higher now. So you'd have to take, to get 4 grams, the 500 milligram capsules, you'd have to take 8 capsules a day, something like that?
Sure. I was taking 12.
12, okay. Actually. Got it.
Yeah,
okay.
Of a particular product that mm-hmm. I liked. And mm-hmm. today I actually take 2 grams. I don't take the full strength. Mm-hmm. And that was just a judgment call backing off of the amount that I was taking
right.
in the event that I needed to maybe ramp it up in the future. And there's other agents, including, curcumin mm-hmm. And others that remain part of, of what I take from a nutraceutical standpoint. And it's still informed, based on what's happening with my, with my terrain, what's happening biochemically.
Vitamin D was part of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Vitamin D, really, it was just a matter of keeping an eye on what the vitamin D serum level is mm-hmm. and then adjusting the amount of, vitamin D based on that serum level. I live in the Northeast, and mm-hmm. so typically, my serum level will dip a little bit in the winter months and go up in the summer months when I'm more active outside.
Glenn, there's some people who discourage cancer patients from taking just a broad-based multi because they feel like in some ways, you don't know, maybe some of those nutrients can push cancer cell proliferation. Were you taking a multi or did you just take certain targeted nutrients without taking everything under the sun?
I do take a multi, but it's that has multiple vitamins and minerals in it. It's not a real kind of broad spectrum, if you will, multi. Mm-hmm. It works with the other agents that I take. So I get most of what I need. Well, I mean, first and foremost, I try to get as much as I possibly can through food sources that has so much better bioavailability and, mm-hmm. in the bloodstream. And then as far as the nutraceuticals, I don't take I take a multi, but it's not like the typical multi that one would take like a Centrum or the typical commercial mm-hmm. multivitamin.
Right.
There's more of kind of a controversy, if you will, with taking antioxidants mm-hmm. in the form yep. of dietary supplements during active chemotherapy and radiation therapy. That's an ongoing kind of debate, if you will.
But it wasn't a consideration with you because really you achieved your remarkable results without ever having gone on chemotherapy or biological therapy, monoclonal antibodies, any of the things that are currently radiation, things that are used for this.
Yes, absolutely. And today, with CLL, there's a group of targeted, the most prominently used now and used for a first line for folks that, need treatment for the first, or being treated for the first time, of kinase inhibitors mm-hmm. That are very targeted, that are oral, that have minimal side effects. There is some concerns about maybe some long-term negative effects. But this is it's still not a curative drug. People have to stay on it pretty much indefinitely, and it's a very expensive drug at $10,000 a month. Mm-hmm. But it by far is much more targeted and effective than the drugs that I had been offered throughout the years.
You have a peculiar relationship to the word cure. You're modest about claims of a cure in the book, correct?
Yes, and I've written about the difference between curing and healing, and by and large, I don't find the word cure is really helpful. If folks are able to achieve long-term durable remissions, I mean that's the goal for me. But I never use the word cure because, everyone has cancer cells in their body. Mm-hmm. And, I am sure I'm not excluded from that. I have cancer cells in my body. Do we know what's happening in the stem cells of, my body? Do we know if there's any hidden leukemic cells that may eventually, make their presence known? We don't know. So I stay away from using the word cure, and it's for so long, and a lot of oncologists still they wait to a patient has had maybe 5 years of period where using today's technology, which requires a lot of cells to see on a scanner on a PET scan. They use the word cure after, let's say, a 5 year period. Congratulations, you're cured. And I don't think I don't think it's very helpful, especially because a lot of people that go through cancer treatment and then recover from that treatment, what my goal would be for folks is to continue taking really good care of themselves, and to continue with hopefully some of the lifestyle changes that they incorporate during treatment and post treatment, and resting on the word cure or putting too much gravitas in hearing that. I also feel that some people may then go back to certain lifestyle or certain ways of living that perhaps made it possible for the disease to take hold in the first place.
So you've gone beyond the book, simply N of One, to embark on an N of One project. And I think you want to really influence the cancer community and the medical community in general about an empowering approach to medicine. So what's that message you're trying to get across, and what are some of the resources available to patients through you?
Well, the core messages of N of One in terms of the book is that we're all unique. We're all an experiment of one or a sample of one. That there's outliers and exceptional patients and radical remissions that happen, often. Perhaps they aren't chronicled as well, as they should be. But it's so critically important for a patient, especially a newly diagnosed patient, with the help of others, whether it's a husband or a friend, other family member, to really understand their disease from a biological standpoint to the extent that they can, and to get a number of opinions, on the treatment of a disease, the course of the disease. The messages are: take control of your situation and bring to bear, put yourself in the center of your own care, and be the best general contractor as you can be to ensure the best potential outcome, and by bringing to bear all the resources available in terms of lifestyle medicine approaches, various types of integrative practitioners that can participate alongside with conventional oncologists, and so those are the core messages of the book. And as far as N of One, I'm a real proponent and a real advocate of those that do have remarkable clinical outcomes that they work with their providers to capture this data in such a way that it can be recorded in the medical literature and can influence those that are investigators, those that are researchers, oncology researchers, so that we can figure out what what this means and how best to utilize this data.
And so the resources that people can access through you?
Well, the resources that can be accessed through me is on glennsabin.com, and that's Glenn with two N's, S-A-B-I-N.com. I encourage folks to sign up to subscribe to my blog. I write fairly frequently. There's a lot of content on my site now with a lot of links to resources around a lot of the things that I'm mentioning today. So there's also a directory of integrative oncology practitioners that I think patients would find very useful. It's for North America, so that's a core resource that's linked to from my site to another site that I run on fonconsulting.com.
Great. Well, listen, thank you so much for sharing your message. N of One is an important book, and your story is an inspiring story. And I wish you continuing success in meeting the challenges of a very, very potentially devastating condition, having the wherewithal, the resources, the intelligence, the nimbleness to be able to navigate the medical system and come up with a solution for you. So great work, Glenn.
Thanks so much for having me, Dr. Hoffman.
My pleasure. It's glennsabin.com. Thanks a lot. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Thanks for joining us.